This is Arsenal in My Blood podcast, a podcast predominantly about, you guessed it, Arsenal. My name is Stevie Hurst, and today with me is AJ. How you doing, buddy? You doing well?
Yeah, I'm doing well. This is AJ Matuchniak over here from the States.
Brilliant. So once again, showing the love that Arsenal spreads around the world, I guess. It's not just in London, the love for Arsenal. It spreads around across the pond to the wonderful world of the States. So that's fantastic stuff. So obviously this is the first of, which I'm sure many podcasts that we've got coming up for you. So what we're going to do to begin with, we're just going to talk a little bit about us.
How we fell in love with Arsenal.
And we'll proceed on there on with the under-21s fixtures and results, ladies fixtures and results, and also players to keep an eye on. For example, Dan Crowley, I'm sure he's not a player that we've gone under our radar, but I'm sure we need to talk about him as well as ZLM as well. And recent first team results and upcoming fixtures. AJ, you're going to give us a little rundown of what's coming up and what players are going to be injured, suspended, that sort of thing.
Yes, I've got that all set up.
Brilliant stuff, brilliant. Then I think the topic to talk about this week is the Ozil injury. I want to look at his history from stats and figures to injury history. That will go nicely into the Shad Forsyth and his role at the club. And then we'll talk a little bit about Jack. Jackie and his future Arsenal England captaincy. And his love for Xavi Alonso videos recently.
Yeah,
with shouts out.
Exactly, with shouts out and predictions. We first goal scorer to end the pod. So to begin with, AJ, tell me a little bit about how you even came across Arsenal. You know, being in America, I'm sure Arsenal's not something you just run into on a daily basis
over in the States.
No, especially because it was I was such a young person, you know, when I first became in love with Arsenal. But that's obviously because my dad was actually born and raised in England, lived there for about 20 years, came out to the States with my mom and. They had me, so I've been a gooner since I was, you know, since I can remember.
Right, so you didn't have a choice.
No, didn't have a choice, but I think it was a good choice by my dad.
Definitely, definitely. It's pretty much the same basis with me, really. Grew up in London, didn't really have a choice. I was born up and raised in and around the Camden sort of Highbury area. I just, you know, early memories of going to watch my dad play in the underground training area at Highbury and all the players coming down the spiral staircase in the car park. I was about 4 or 5. I was playing with a football, kicking it about as you do. My dad saw Tony Adams and all that lot coming down the stairs, Ian Wright. They grabbed the football, nicked it off me, got it all signed. What did I do? Put the football back down on the floor and kicked it about again. My dad went absolutely mental. Had to pick the ball back up and, you know, take it away from me. I didn't understand why. I didn't know who these guys were. I was 4. Yeah. I just wanted to kick the ball. I wanted to play for Arsenal. I didn't care who people were. But yeah, so pretty much the same basis. Didn't really have a choice. But I think that's the best way. I think, you know, our fathers had a good understanding.
Hey, just be counting your lucky stars that it wasn't Spurs.
Yeah, see, half my family supports Spurs. And ironically enough, I don't speak to them. I think it's irony that they're Spurs. There are obviously other reasons why we don't speak. It's not because there are Spurs. God, that'd be very little, you know, little-minded, small-minded of me. But it kind of so happened that they were actually Spurs fans. Okay, right. So, yeah, that's so basically, in a nutshell, we didn't get a choice with who we supported.
And our fathers
chose some pretty good clubs for us. And we've been obsessed with Arsenal ever since, I can safely say. So a little bit about Arsenal in My Blood podcast. I guess, you know, it's something that you wanted to do and I wanted to do. And we found ourselves on Twitter, the wonderful world of the internet.
Yeah.
So, we got together. We didn't know, we knew what we wanted to do. And we kind of we wanted to make it come out on a Monday morning, which I'm hoping that we'll be doing for you straight away. So that'd be brilliant. Obviously, we are in the international lull at the moment. So currently I am watching the England-Estonia game. Jack's looking a bit fragile, actually. I'm saying that. So what we'll do is we'll go straight into the Arsenal under-18 academy as well as ladies' results and fixtures. Okay, right. So we are looking at, we've got a game coming up on the 11th of October. That is against West Ham under-18s, but we previously played Southampton under-18s, the Academy League. That was 0-0. That was on the 4th of October. On the 1st of October, though, we played Galatasaray, and that was the under-19s. Let me just get some match news on that. So it was 5-1 to us. So that's brilliant. It's always a good thing.
Yeah.
I like it when the youth players actually win games. That's great. So we had Zelalem, Hines, Willock, Iwobi, and Crowley with a penalty in the 70th minute to round off quite a good game. So we had Kupuz on the 90th to get a nice consolation goal. So they go away with the game thinking, yeah, we scored. So there we are. I'm sure that you've heard of Zelalem before and Crowley. But what's your knowledge on those boys? Well,
with Zelalem, for sure, especially in the United States, because everybody wants him to now play for the U.S. Because of his huge talent that he showed in the, not this last preseason, but I say the ones this year. Those great through balls that he was playing to Wolcott and the like. So we're really excited in the U.S. Hopefully he picks us over Germany for his international team. And then, of course, Crowley, I think we've all started to see the last year because he's really come up. He's, you know, everybody says it reminds him of Jack, but it seems like he has a little bit more trickery. So he's a really good one to look forward to. He's just a little small and fragile right now.
Yeah, it's you know, it will take a while. Obviously, you know, Theo Walcott took him quite a while to really bolster up for the Premier League. You know, every now and again he'd go down with a shoulder injury. That was the hereditary shoulder injury he got all the time. You know, his shoulder kept on popping in and out every other game, so they had to sort that out very, very sharpish. Obviously, he went under the knife, and that fingers crossed we've not seen it since. Touch wood, malarkey. One thing on the Zelalem, actually, Jürgen Klinsmann, obviously, he's done a fantastic job with the USA national team. Very, very cleverly, actually, you know, poaching players from other nations that have got a little bit of American history in them, but doing it in the correct way. He's gone, you know, this is the setup here. You know, if you want to come over, we'll have a chat. You know, you see what the sort of setup we've got here, and he's done it so well that they've all gone, do you know what? I love what you're doing here. I feel really passionate about this. I'm going to choose America.
Yeah, I mean, it worked. It worked with Julian Green, who's you know, on loan away from Bayern right now. But I mean, to have a Bayern player
exactly
for playing for the US is huge.
It's a huge thing. But I've been saying it for ages. You know, you've got those the deals that are set in place at the moment with I've probably got my facts wrong, but as far as I know, when you set up the MLS, you had some sponsorship deals set in place for like 10 years or something, I think it was. Or once they all sort of obviously disappear and they run their end of their contracts, clubs will be able to sign sponsors, new kit deals, different things like that. They'll also look into the ideas of getting rid of drafting. Uh-huh. Once they get rid of all those aspects, the MLS will be an look at the you know, the talent pool that you've got available to you in America. You're going to be a powerhouse in sort of years to come. And I'm pretty sure I heard Zelen mention from his agent. I don't know if you know Danny Cabassioun. He's obviously an American legend as well. Obviously played for America, doing the scouting now and he found Zelalem. But as far as I remember hearing him on a podcast a little while ago, it might have been on Gooner Girls podcast. Or Burkamp Wonderland, a couple of fantastic podcasts, by the way. So if you don't listen to him, get involved. I remember listening very briefly that he said that Zelalem is pretty much confident that he's going to be choosing America when it comes to.
And I think that's because if you look at Germany, he could get one cap and then never play for them again. Because, I mean, their talent there is just immense. Like, this is not a knock on Zelalem, but I think if he did go for them, it'd be very difficult for him to get into the team. Whereas U.S., in 1 or 2 years, he's for sure in the team starting lineup.
That's exactly it. I think he'll blossom, really come into his own playing for the American team. And considering what they've got coming up for him, as I said, with regards to the sponsorship deals and getting rid of the drafting and stuff, and the talent pool that's available to him, I think they'll become, as I said, one of the biggest powerhouses in the world. Considering, you know, it's already starting to happen. They did progress, you know, more than England in the recent in the recent World Cup. So, you know, who knows? Yeah, I mean, who knows what will happen? You know, just watch the space, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So the under 21s in the actual Premier League table for them, they are currently third with 10 points. So they've played 5, won 3, drew 1 and lost 1. With a 9 goals, 4 and 5 against. With the academy, so you're looking under 18s, they've played 8. They're in third place also, 15 points, 4 wins, 3 draws and 1 loss. But nice to say, they've scored 19 and conceded only 8, which is very nice. So their defence is doing very nicely there. Right, moving on to the ladies, which I never get the amount of credit that they're due. They've obviously won a hell of a lot more trophies than the Arsenal men's first team in recent history. The recent game was on the 5th of October. They played Liverpool ladies. It was a 3-3 draw, actually. Nobbs scored on the 1st and 13th minute and Stoney on the 50th. Williams, Rosler and Davison scoring for Liverpool. We had a couple of games before that as well. We had a 4-3 win against Bristol Academy ladies and a 2-0 win against Notts County ladies. So the last few games have been successful for the Arsenal ladies, which is great. The table looks as it stands. They're fourth, which sounds great, but there's only 8 teams in the actual full table. So it's the Women's Super League, so there's only 8. So they're mid-table. 13 played, 5 wins, 3 draws and 5 losses with 18 points. So there you have it. I will obviously every week I will keep you up to date with the academy, under 21s, under 18s, under 19s, as well as the ladies' tables as well. So what have we got next coming up on the agenda for Arsenal?
Well, our next game is move on to the fixtures. The next game is on Saturday the 18th against Hull City, and I looked up their injuries right now. They only have 3. I wish that was us. And they're to El Mohammadi, McGregor, and Snodgrass. So Snodgrass had he tore his ACL, so he's going to be out for the whole season, if I remember correctly, yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, he's a fantastic player. I remember playing. Yeah. I remember him playing for Leeds. Yeah, brilliant sweet player. Brilliant. Wow. Okay, so he obviously left Norwich when they got relegated.
And then El Mohammadi is their right wing back. So yeah. I don't know if maybe if they're injured, that maybe they'll switch to a 4 at the back. Maybe instead of a 5 at the backs, so that's a big possibility.
That'll be interesting. That'll be interesting. Oh. Are we playing away or at home? Okay. So exactly. You know, we should be dictating the tempo.
And then
obviously from the get go, pushing those attacks. We'll talk about injuries a little bit later on with regards to Arsenal. But what you know is I'm hoping for.
Yeah, we'll do predictions at the end. But
who we got next?
I know what mine is.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I haven't had a thought about think about it yet. But who we got next?
We have Anderlecht.
You know,
away.
Oh, of course, yes. Anderlecht in the Champions League group. Have we got anything to worry about there?
No, I think we should be fine. Actually, one American player is on that team. I believe it's what's his name? I'm not gonna say it just because I screw myself over.
No worries, dude. You just can't. You just Google it. Come back to it when you remember. Do you know who we're playing?
Sunderland
at all.
Away on Saturday the 25th.
Yep.
And for they only have 3 as well. Alvarez, so their centre back. Quates, another centre back. So that's 2, but they have no return date. So, but you never know. That's 2 weeks from now with no return date means that they could be back quite soon. And then the big one, that was Giaccherini, who obviously was called up for Italy this past interlull, and he won't be there. So that's a good thing.
That's a bonus. Okay, brilliant. I think we'll just lightly graze over the recent fixtures. the Chelsea game. Let's just bite our lip and just go in for it. Okay, so the Chelsea game, it wasn't great. A lot of people are talking how we're a better team than we were when we lost 6-0, which I'm sure is an obvious thing. Mm-hmm. You know, conceding 4 less goals. I'm not sure how you can class that as a positive, but you know, I'm sure it's just, you know, it's a silver lining on a dark cloud. So I'll take it as that. So we had Hazard, you know, doing that, twining run, which was just incredible. He's got the most successful dribble rate in the Premier League at the moment. You know, what do you expect? A guy that we looked at for ages, but once again, Wenger didn't pull his finger out, and Chelsea jumped in and nabbed him, which is all too often happening at Arsenal and has done for the last 10 years. But he won the penalty and then converted it, which I think is the thing that you need to do. If you win the penalty, I think you should be taking it. But there we are. So he scored quickly on the
penalty.
And then
side note, I was talking to a lot of Gooners about how Chesney's penalty saving record has been pretty terrible since he's added his new side to side thing that he does before he saves it. Like the past few years, he's been doing that, and I really don't see how he's going to be able to save any penalty, because it's obvious where he's diving, and when he does dive the right way, he doesn't get enough length on his dive, because he's been totally moving to the other side, you know, a good 2 feet. So I don't really see the point. I think he should just stand his ground, look big, and then dive the right way.
So by doing that, he's trying to distract the player. Because I'll be honest with you, I play FIFA, and that's what I do. I try and distract the penalty taker by going left and right, but it always leaves
me too
short.
If you look at Hazard,
it always leaves me too short.
He didn't look once at the ball, looked straight at Chesney and kicked the ball in because he knew where he was going to go.
Yeah, well, he kept on looking at the bottom left, and not once did he look at the ball. He knows that's how experienced these kind of players are. They know exactly how many steps and what angle they need to come in at without even looking. That is absolutely just phenomenal. But there we are. You know, I do it all the time on a Sunday. Do you know what I mean? You know. But once again, Fabregas, absolutely, it broke my heart. Absolutely broke my heart seeing him in a Chelsea shirt. That amazing deep line playmaker that obviously we're trying to do with Jack, which we'll talk about in a bit. But that goal from Costa was just, it's one of those situations. Again, remember when we played Napoli last season and Higuain was invisible for the entire game, but he got that opportunity on the D of the penalty box and just buried it. And that's pretty much what Costa did. You know, he might be invisible the entire game, but he gets one opportunity and he'll put it in the back of the net, which is what you need from a top class striker. But that ball from Fabregas was just something else. I'll tell you now, something else. What did you take?
A lot of people thought that it was an improvement, obviously, from 6-0, which it is. But I mean, I don't think a loss is still a loss. I don't think that we can really consider that a good game. I think we did all right in the beginning. The first half, I thought we looked quite good until after the penalty. Then looked a little nervous, and after Chambers got his yellow card, you could tell that he needed help because he wasn't able to dive in into any tackles with Hazard. So maybe we should have had a little system change where Alexis kind of helps out a little more defensively on the right side. But no, I think I never really thought we were going to score at any point, because you saw like we had zero shots on goal, which hasn't happened since 2003, I think they said.
Did we not get a shot on goal with Podolski's last little effort? I'm pretty sure that was a shot on target. With regards to the Chambers yellow card, actually, I think that was a defining moment in the game, to be honest with you, because you're right. Not the tactics weren't tweaked to be able to support Chambers. You know, Flamini kept on just leaving him in the lurch, which kept on dragging Koscielny out of position, which resulted in our downfall. But I think you're right. You know, we were chasing that goal to make it 1-1, and then we obviously got shot down when the Costa scored. But it just never looked defining. It looked like, you know, the same old Arsenal. We'll do those pretty passing outside the box, but we'll never get the finished article. The amount of times I hear Arsenal fans getting really frustrated at Arsenal players for taking a shot, I go absolutely mental. I say take another shot.
He's taken a few shots the past couple of games where they've flown, look like they're going to go in, but haven't. But I don't mind that, you know, 30 yards out, just take one.
Exactly. Exactly that. Right. Okay. So let's leave that well alone. We'll briefly, very briefly, look at the Galatasaray game, obviously, because that was a little while ago now. Obviously, Welbeck getting his hat trick, his first ever senior hat trick, the first time he ever scored a hat trick when he was a little man playing for Man United reserves or under 21s. I'm not sure what it was. And then Sanchez obviously scoring that beautiful rounded goal as well. And I'll tell you one thing, a lot of people saying, you know, obviously Sanchez plays
on
the
right.
Yeah,
I mean, he can cut in and shoot on his right foot. But I think with the people who are able to cut in, which I think Sanchez has because he's got the quick feet to do it, is that if you can cut in on your right and shoot, you'd much rather shoot on your right and cross with your left, like your weaker foot, than you would the other way around. Like, nobody wants to shoot with their weaker foot.
Exactly. We didn't bring Sanchez into the team to be crossing the ball in, did we, to be honest with you? Right, so there we are. That was all the games that we played in the October. Obviously, we had 1-1 with Spurs just before that, which we won't go over. Right, so moving on. What have we got to watch out for and who is it? Who are we looking for? Who are we looking forward to seeing playing in the first team? I think it's a great way. Obviously, we've got Dan Crowley and Gideon Zelalem. But are they the players?
I don't think right now that they're ready to be put into the team. I think, you know, obviously a defensive midfielder is what we need. I don't think either of them really fill that role. Maybe Zelalem could in turn turn out to be a deep-lying playmaker. But I think right now he's just not ready. But Akpom's the one I think I'd want to talk about that maybe – as a sub, if you want to have two strikers up top at the end, he could do something. He could just add energy. But again, I'm not sure his finishing or even his strength will be up to scratch right now. But I mean, he did score for England, and he's been scoring, it seems like, every game for Arsenal 21s.
Yeah, no, he's been doing actually very, very well. I'm just having a look at his stats now for this season.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not been updated. Oh, the Arsenal website's not been updated. That's a shock. So I can't give you the figures there. But one player I'm actually looking forward to seeing a lot more of this season is Isaac Hayden. I think that's a player. And obviously Hector Bellerin, he's already sort of made his little debut. But Isaac Hayden is definitely a player, I think.
Is he the DM we need?
Are crying out for. Obviously, we... I don't know if he's the DM we need right now, but he's a DM that would, you know, be interesting to look at in a few years' time. We need someone rough and ready. You know, Wenger's changed his philosophy now. You know, ever since we got battered 8-2 by Man United, he went out and bought some, you know, ready-made players, Arteta and Mertesacker. These players are veterans of football. He hasn't bought someone and, you know, on a whim and just, you know, see them progress. He's gone out there and bought, you know, class players that have already got the pedigree to be able to deal with the Premier League. So he's not the player that we're looking forward to right now. You know, the talk of Khedira possibly coming in January,
he's definitely the player that we're looking for. People like talk about how he's only box to box, but to be honest, I think he'll, even if he is box to box, he'll do a lot of work defensively. He's strong. He's maybe 6'1", maybe 6'2", something like that. He's quite big. He can put in a tackle. He's not afraid to get stuck in.
Exactly that. Another player that I've been looking at is Jack Jebb. Very good at dead ball. If you haven't watched any of his stuff, just check on YouTube, Jack Jebb, free kicks, and you'll get a nice roster of them. And obviously Dan Crowley, who we poached from Aston Villa, no need of introduction for that fella. I think we'll see him very, 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 very soon. But I hope they don't do what they did to Jack, to Dan Crowley, you know, putting too much expectation on him.
Hopefully he bumps up a little bit this season. Season he should go out on loan. I mean, we should see him how he does in preseason, then send him out on loan. And then maybe the year after that, when he's, I think it'll be 18, we'll see if he's ready.
Sounds good to me. Right. Okay. So let's look at the, I think it's pretty much the main topic of today, and that's Ozil. The injury and the class of the player. So I've done a little bit of research into it. Obviously, there was a tweet that went round for a little while, and it was a picture of Ozil with Ozil's injury history. So I'll read out some statistics for you, and you take it with what you will. So obviously he started at Schalke and then went to Bremen and then went to Real Madrid and then he's now obviously at Arsenal. Schalke, in his time there in the first team, he was out for a total of 7 days. 7 days. Werder Bremen out for a total of 29 days. Real Madrid didn't miss one single day of football. He was always available. And Arsenal, he's been there a year.
So do you put that down to the league or do you put that down to maybe Chad Forsythe? Well, not Chad Forsythe because obviously last season he wasn't there, but or do you put it down to just the Arsenal training staff?
That's a thing. That's a thing. You know, Chad Forsythe was obviously brought in. And weirdly enough, nobody lost their job. Nobody was replaced. A new role and position was created for Chad Forsythe. So that speaks words alone. You know what I mean? They felt like the situation was such an extent that they needed to create a role for Chad to come in, do his work. Because I don't know if you do, you know, he comes from a company that's pretty much like the vanguard of regimes of workouts and fitness. You know, they've got a fantastic thing going on over there. Welbeck's just missed an absolute amazing chance there for England. As I said, I am watching the England-Estonia game as we record this podcast on a Sunday afternoon. Whether it's Arsenal or it's the... Or it's the Premier League, maybe? Or is it just Wenger once again maybe rushing his players back too soon?
I don't think with the Ozil case that it's Wenger's fault of reintroducing them too early. But it has to be partially the league. I think you can't look beyond that. So I won't blame Ozil for that. But definitely it must be some of the Arsenal staff as well because it's not just him. It's half our players are always out every season.
Exactly. So you don't think it's that particular situation that seems to be, always happening in regards to Wenger, obviously, you know, misselection or, you know, because obviously the squad depth's not fantastic. Yeah. Never has been, you know, maybe never will be. I don't know. We'll see. But you don't think it to be that. What do you actually think it to be? Do you think
because everybody else is in the Premier League then, and exactly people are like, but Arsenal have more slight players, and that's true. I mean, we do have this one of some of the smallest players in the league. But you look at, you know, players like Hazard for Chelsea. He's not a big guy. He's small. You never really see him injured for more than 2-3 weeks a season. But it seems like for us, we have every player out at least a month. And it must be some of our fitness methods or training methods or something is definitely off. And hopefully, Chad will be able to put his influence on it soon because, I mean, he's been here a few months now and still we're having as many injuries as we did before.
Right. One little thing which I did find when I looked at the Mesut Ozil statistics, he's not one to score many goals, which is something that when you're watching the Premier League, it's kind of... you know, you're not forgiven as a player if you don't bury the ball into the back of net every now and again. For example, in the 159 appearances that he played for Real Madrid, he only scored 27 goals. And for Werder Bremen, he scored, I think it's like 24 goals in the 4 years he was there. So he wasn't brought into the club to be a goal scoring machine. But I think a lot of people, you know, don't seem to understand that. You know, he wasn't bred to be a goal scorer. He was bred to be
had the capability of doing that. We've seen him play amazing through balls. But then he needs to figure out how to do it when it's in tight spaces. Like we saw him against Aston Villa play, have the ability to run all the way down the line and cross it for Welbeck. And then we had him be able to run in and score himself. But then you see Chelsea where it's very tight. As soon as they're 1-0 up, they make it very tight. He's the creator. So if he's not going to be scoring them and he's not going to be doing defensive work, he has to be doing something. And that something has to be him creating in tight situations because that's what the best players do. And we bought him to be our best player.
Exactly. That bottles down, I think, to positioning. for Mesut Ozil, everyone talks about, you know, playing in the centre for attacking midfield. I've just looked on the whoscored.com website, which is a fantastic website, a bit like Squawker, if you're familiar with either. But I did mention to you before, actually, that attacking midfield centre, he rocks an 8.39 rating. Obviously, that's their statistics. On a left mid,
the only reason that I could think that Wenger wants to play Ozil on the left, because obviously everybody except for him is seeing that it's not a good idea to play him on the left. But the only reason that I could think that he's doing it is that he sees that he wants to have Jack and Ramsey as the two central midfielders. Like, he wants to keep both of them in the team, but he realizes that both of them are quite attacking, so that maybe he doesn't want to sacrifice one of them as the defensive midfielder. So to do that, he has to take out the number 10 role. And, you know, we've seen this season, this 4-1-4-1, which I'm not a huge fan of. And he's stuck Ozil on the wing just because he has to have his 42.5 million pound player in the team. But to be honest, it's not working out for us. Like, I'd much rather see us go back to a 4-2-3-1, have Jack and Ramsey switch every now and then, because one of them's always injured, or the other one's always tired, or so some case like that, and maybe have Pace on the wings. We always have to have Pace on the wings. We have the Chamberlain, Wolcott, and Alexis that, you know, all should be probably ready for Hall. I'm not sure about Wolcott, but all rotate between three of them for players on the wing, and then attacking midfielder, you know, that number 10 role, you have Ozil and you have Cazorla, just two fantastic players that you can rotate. So I'm not really sure why Wenger's playing him on the left.
I think you're onto something, though, with regards to that. He obviously wants to fit Jack and Ramsey into the team with whatever cost it comes down to. But I've been saying it for the past couple of weeks now. I hope Jack and Ramsey are not the new Gerrard and Lampard England situation where they just can't play together. I hope that's not the thing. After watching these few games this season, I'm starting to see signs. They can't seem to play together. They're too similar. They're both old school box to box. They love to get involved. But I'm sure time will tell. Time will tell whether we can actually do it or not. You know, Wenger's the guy that sees them on the training field.
Wilshere has looked very good and better than Ramsey so far this season, even though Ramsey's bagged two goals. But, you know, I just don't know how you're going to be able to fit both of them unless you sacrifice one of them as the defensive midfielder.
Exactly. So that's what will happen, isn't it? That is exactly what will happen with the Arsenal fans. They'll have their blessed Ozil playing in the centre attacking midfield position, but then they'll go, oh, you're stifling, Ramsey's growth or Wilshere's growth.
Yeah.
You know, Wenger unfortunately is in that position where he can't win. We'll have a quick peruse over the rest of the injuries of the first team, and then we'll talk a little bit about Jack and his recent blossom, because I feel it's his year to really shine. You know, it's his make or break season, I think is the word to use. Currently injured, you obviously got Olivier Giroud, so you're possibly looking around 3 months. Obviously December, January, we won't be seeing him till. We've got Matthew Debushi, 2 months. Yaya Sanogo and Theo Walcott any day now. I don't know what I'm more excited for, Sanogo or Walcott or both. Oh my god, Sanogo. You know, it's never a party without Sanogo. So Aaron Ramsey as well. That's 2 weeks. I actually met Aaron Ramsey recently at a Sonny Schools Cup, which was fantastic. I posted it all over my Twitter. So we'll talk about Twitters a little bit later on. Mikel Arteta any day back, which will be great. Obviously, you know, he's not the defensive midfielder we need, but he's the defensive midfielder we've got. And, you know, sometimes you have to make do with what you've got. He's a fantastic player. You know, he got brought into the club as an attacking player. And he's older and wise enough and ugly enough with perfect hair to be able to do a job in defensive midfielder. So Serge Gnabry any day, Mesut Ozil 3 months, and Laurent Koscielny, those tight tendons, It's looking 3 weeks. So not fantastic. Well, what's your centre-back partnership that's going
to
be?
There's any argument. It has to just be Chambers and Mertesacker, because I don't think we really, unless we want to pull Hayden in, like you mentioned earlier, but I just don't know if he'll be ready for that. So I'd probably put Chambers centre-back and Bellerin at right-back. But one thing I'd tell Bellerin is that make sure, and actually all full-backs for that matter, is make sure that they stay back a little bit more. I find that because Szczęsny ends up running around everywhere, and Mertesacker is just kind of slow, so he doesn't really do much when our oppositions are on the counterattack. So I think we should, Wenger should definitely talk to Bellerin, Gibbs, Monreal, Debuchy, all of them about how they need to hold their positions more, not get so far forward, let the wingers be wingers, and that's about it.
It's funny you say that, saying Isaac Hayden, you don't think he's ready. And how much Chambers is ready. And to think that Isaac Hayden and Chambers are pretty much the same age. Mind-boggling. But that's how much of an impact Chambers has made since he's moved to Arsenal. For example, he's once again started for England. He's on the pitch right now at right back. He's got the pace. He's got the work. He's got the work rate. Which is seen not only by Arsene Wenger, but also by the wonderful granddad that is Roy Hodgson. So we've talked about injuries. We've talked about Mesut Ozil, and how he's done it in his previous clubs, but he's yet to obviously, really make a massive impact. But I think it's the Premier League. I think he's struggling. But I think it'll be a make or break season for him as well, He's not got that first season excuse under his belt anymore. He's got to really, really push on and make something of himself. So let's talk a bit about Jack now, who's currently on the ball for England, and his new role at Arsenal and England. So if anybody knows, obviously England have changing up formations. They're playing a diamond four in the centre. Two on the wing, one in the 10, and one in deep playmaker. And Jack is currently playing there and is looking like he might be doing the same for Arsenal also. How do you feel about that?
He's got the passing ability to do it. We saw him pass through Rooney against San Marino, who, Shrek ended up screwing that up with his little chip. I think this would be the perfect solution. If he's able to sort out his defensive game, not get too far forward, I think every now and then his little burst of pace forward is very, very needed. But if he's able to hold himself pretty well defensively, I think this is a perfect solution, because then we can have the 4-2-3-1 with Arsenal play Ramsey and Wilshere together, because we'll know that Wilshere will be holding more. So this would be perfect. But is it the DM that we need? I don't know. Most of us have been talking about more of a Matic solution than a Pirlo solution.
A guy that's just looks like he's built out of some bricks, and he kind of just stands there and you don't want to go near him. That sort of DM we're looking for. One thing that I have been looking at for over the part, I don't know if it was today or yesterday. Apparently, I don't know if it's Arsenal or England staff or a bit of both, have been sending a lot of Xavi Alonso videos to Jack Wilshere in a way of sort of saying, this is the player that we want you to be. Just replicate it. And I don't know about you, but Xavi Alonso is, when he was playing at Liverpool, he was an incredible player. And he went to obviously Real Madrid and became even more incredible. And now he's gone to Bayern Munich and became just phenomenal. The guy seems to just progress. So if we could get anything like that, that would be brilliant. I just don't want it to hamper Jack's talents elsewhere.
He's probably one of the best defensive playmakers to watch. So I think it's a great thing that England's trying to show him some of those videos. But the only thing that I'd say about Alonso to Wilshere is that Alonso's, again, probably like maybe 6 feet tall, and he's pretty strong, whereas Jack Wilshere's 5'8", and he's strong, and he'll get stuck in. But, at the same time, he could do a Flamini, if – remember the last game when Flamini lost the ball? He could possibly do that. Just because he's a little bit slight compared to some of the other big defensive midfielders. But I think Xavi Alonso has the chance, or Wilshere has the chance to be a player like Xavi Alonso, but if he just sorts out his defensive game, I think he'll be able to do it. Just kind of like how Fabregas, I think, well, in a few years' time, I think once his old legs are gone, I think he'll be able to do that kind of role. But the thing with Fabregas is that he might be able to do it more successfully because, again, he's bigger than Jack Wilshere. So I'm not too sure, but what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'll be honest with you, Jack. There's a lot of habits in Jack Wilshere's game that frustrate me, but I liked it as the young, tenacious player that he was. But which, you know, he's getting a bit older now, and he needs to, you know, wise up a little bit. For example, one of the things that he does quite a lot is draws in a foul pretty much every time he's on the ball. He'll which is great for everyone around him, because, you know, one or two or even three players will go in to make the tackle on him, and because he'll release the ball last minute, he does get down quite a lot, and everyone gets a little bit worried about his ankles. But that's it. That's part of his game that he's always had. And it's whether you want to say, shall I get rid of that part of his game? And does that hamper him in the future? Is that getting rid of part of how Jack Wilshere plays? But then you look at someone like Aaron Ramsey, who was told to simplify his game by Arsene Wenger, and look what happened to him last season. You know, apart from obviously the massive injury, you know, he turned into a different player altogether. So once again, it's the make or break season for Jack Wilshere, I think. You know, we've got to, you know, keep an eye on Mesut Ozil when he's back in January. He's really got to pull something out of the bag. But I think this season is all about Jack. All about Jack and whether he can do it. But he started off really well. He's obviously getting a lot of starts for England as well as Arsenal. So let's watch this space. So yeah.
I think we'll just move on to shout outs and predictions.
I can't think of anything else. Can you think of anything else? Let's look at shout outs. So let's ladies before gentlemen.
Shout out to actually a group of people called OC Gooners.
Who's your shout out, Orange County Gooners?
That's where I'm from. And it's a great group of people. We have about 500 now, I would say. We all go down to the English pub every week and go watch the game. And, you know, the big games, you know, Man United, Tottenham, Chelsea, we'll get about 100, 150 people in there, and it's just packed. And it's not obviously the official Arsenal pub, but definitely the biggest crowd is Arsenal fans. Then maybe Chelsea is next, but it's always great playing Tottenham because there's only one Spurs fan every time.
Brilliant. Sounds brilliant. Okay, cool. My shout out is for KB. That's at KB, likened as a bumblebee, AFC. She is one of the proud members of the Gooner Girls podcast, a podcast that I did make my debut on doing podcasting. I'm a presenter naturally, which I do in full-time-ish. But making my podcast debut was on the Gooner Girls podcast, and KB was actually one of the people that I watched the FA Cup final win last season against Hull, weirdly enough. It was a great day. I lost my shoe.
Yeah, I actually was.
But apart from that, brilliant day.
Do you remember where you were? Like I said before, it's probably almost 300 people there, people who weren't even part of those Gooners, and then decided, I'll just show up to the English pub, and, you know, it was like, they stopped letting people in at certain points because it was just so packed. And I just remember jumping around cheering when Ramsey scored, just beer flying everywhere, which hopefully didn't fall into my mouth. Under 21, you know?
Yeah. Nice. No, yeah, all right, yeah, fair enough. Okay, cool. Let's give out our Twitter accounts as well. So we've got Arsenal in my blood, Arsenal. So that's at Arsenal Blood Pod. So give us a follow. You know, we're quite nice guys. We'll, if you're an Arsenal fan and you're, you know, you've got hashtag Gooner Family, we'll give you a follow back, as do I on my own personal Twitter account, which is at Stevie_.
It's at AJ Gunners 14, obviously 14 for Thierry Henry, but, at AJ Gunners 14.
Of course, brilliant. Obviously, Thierry Henry when he joined the club, He wanted the number 12 shirt, but that was taken. So he was given the number 14 shirt reluctantly, but he kind of transformed the shirt. So there we are, kind of transformed it. But there we are. So predictions, if you want to give us a rundown of who we are, once again, who we're going to be playing in the next few weeks.
Okay, well, we're playing Hull on the 18th, and then Wednesday on the 22nd, Anderlecht, and on the 25th, which is a Saturday, we're playing Sunderland. But for the home game against Hull, I'm going to go 2-0, and I'm going to go Santa Cazorla, and then number 10 goal.
Ooh, spicy, spicy, spicy. Okay, so Hull, I'm thinking they want to try and come back against us in the FA Cup final. They can score quick goals. So I'm thinking 3-0 to us. You know, we're just going to absolutely pulverize them because they're going to be trying to come out of the traps. We're playing at home. We'll get them on a counter. You know, I'll try not to have any too many heart palpitations from any corners they might have.
Ooh,
3-0 to us with Walcott scoring on his comeback game. Oh yeah,
I think that would be. I'm feeling it. Okay, away, so Anderlecht. I do think what do you feel? It is Anderlecht. I don't want to sound too boring, but I'm gonna go another 2-0, and this time I'll go Alexis.
Okay, brilliant. Okay, yeah. So I think we'll do a 1-0 there. To be honest with you. I think we'll do a 1-0 there. The international lull will tire us out a little bit. We'll have a tight game of 3-0 against Hull, and then go on to Anderlecht with a 1-0. I'm a massive believer of as long you know it doesn't matter how many goals you score as long as you don't concede.
Well, that's
a great philosophy to have.
We'll save Sunderland for next week because that's 2 weeks down the line.
Score that one. Brilliant. I like it. Okay, cool. So there we are. That is officially the first ever recording of Arsenal In My Blood podcast. You know, we didn't get a choice of supporting Arsenal, but it was a great choice all the same. So we will be back again next week. We will try and record every Sunday. Obviously, this being our first, we're cutting out a few bugs here and there, you know, making sure that it all runs smoothly. But we'll try and do this every Sunday, so you will get this on a Monday morning. Download.
See you guys later.
There we are, from myself, Stevie, and AJ. That is it.
Nice.
Yeah, take care, guys. See you later.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said that. Nah, I mean, I'll say something.
I don't know if you
want to
have a closing word. Do you know what I mean?
Say something. Yeah, let's say it seemed longer, but that's
so that was roughly 47 minutes.
One thing I would say is that we did take a while on the 21s and 18s thing. Like, I definitely think we should have that because I think that's a great thing to have. But I think we took almost 5 or 10 minutes on just that.